B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once successfully convinced our receptionist that even par was a Swedish pop star, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT_golf guy. If you'd have told me that Tiger Woods winning again, this time in Japan, and tying Sam Snead's record of 82 tour wins was going to be overshadowed by another story in golf this week, I'd have said you were crazy. However, I think it's happened. Gary McCord and Peter Costas, both longtime fixtures with CBS Golf, were relieved of their duties this week, and Davis Love III was hired by the Tiffany Network. That's what we call a wow. We'll discuss this and the evolving televised golf landscape with Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel, and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. And no, we will not ignore the big cat. Justin Ray is the ultimate golf stats nerd in the business for years. He was the guy in the ear of all the Golf Channel and NBC announcers, feeding them those gems of information. Well, now he's with a company called 15th Club Golf Analytics, and he'll be with us to take a deep dive into Tiger by the numbers. But we begin with Ron Cyrak. You know, Ron, anytime we have a Tiger victory, it seems that we all want to jump to hyperbole and we all want to immediately transport ourselves back to the year 2000. And the fact of the matter is those days are gone. I guess my question, first off, is can we expect more often to happen what we saw this past weekend? Or can we expect more often to happen that Tiger's like Ben Hogan and shows up six or seven times a year and we get what we get? Or is it more likely that we will see more often Tiger show up ready to play and it's just one of those weeks where the back doesn't feel right like we saw at the PGA? Which of those three scenarios can we expect more?
You know, I don't think we know, and I think that's what makes us fascinating going forward. It looks like Tiger's got four or five more years left in him. The caveat is his health. You know, will the back hold up? Will the knee hold up? He looked pretty good. At the British Open this year, at the PGA, he looked miserable. But he looked good. He looked limber. I also like the way he was playing. He's playing much more strategic. He's playing more Nicklaus-like now than he ever has in his life. The old Tiger didn't want to just beat you. He wanted to crush you. He wanted to demolish you. This guy just wants to win any way he can. Job one for him is hit that little cut into the fairway, put the ball into green, and hope to make a putt. But the question is, how will his body hold up? And if his body holds up, we could see a fascinating little run from him through his mid-40s here.
When he is at his best currently, is he the best player in the world still?
I don't think so. I think there are other guys that if he's at his best and, say, Rory McIlroy's at his best or Brooks Koepka is at his best, I think they're better than him. The problem is for both McIlroy and Koepka is, you know, they don't get to their best as often as Tiger gets to his best. And right now what we're finding is and we saw it throughout. When Tiger was the full Tiger, he won with his B game all the time. That's sort of the game that he has right now, but he's figuring out how to win with it. He is as I said, he's playing more strategic. He's letting other players make the mistakes. You know, think about that back nine at Augusta National this year at the Masters. There were three or four, five other guys who had a really, really good chance to win, and Tiger just laid back and let them make mistakes. He got to 13, he got to 15. He didn't try to make eagle because he knew he didn't have to. He knew he needed just a four. So he played safe, center of the green, two-putt four, move on, hit the hero shot on 16, and then he wins it on 18, not with a birdie, but with a bogey, because that's all he needed to do. So I think that's what we're seeing from him. But there are right now players who are more physically skilled than him. I'm not sure if there's ever been anybody who's had the competitive fire burning their belly as hot as it does for Tiger.
Yeah, you know, it's I think, you know, just in our minds, we always just think, okay, this is the guy who wins seven times a year, and that guy's gone. I think everybody just accept the fact that guy's gone. But this is the guy who's won three out of his last 14 starts, which is the same as Rory McIlroy, which is the best of anybody in their last 14 starts. And so you just kind of have to say, okay, this isn't the old Tiger, but this Tiger's pretty damn good, and you know, he can hold his own with any of these guys.
You know, I remember 2008 Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, and I'm standing off to the left of the 18th green, and Tiger has about an 18-footer for birdie to win the tournament, and he makes it. And when the putt went in, he pumped his fist, he screamed in the air, he threw his hat to the ground. He was acting like he had never won a golf tournament before in his life, and it was his 64th victory. That's something you can't teach. That's something you can't learn. That's something that's just in your DNA. It's inside of you, and that's what Tiger has in him. That desire to compete, that desire to win, and he's going to keep grinding on and getting as much out of his ability as his body's going to let him do. And I think it's going to be fun to watch. If you had asked me a year ago if Tiger was ever going to win again, I'd have said no. And now he's won three times in that time period. It's remarkable what he's able to do.
Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel is our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned that old Tiger didn't just want to beat you. He wanted to demolish you. He wanted to crush your spirit. I saw something this last weekend that I never thought I would use this word about Tiger, but I think I see acceptance now in Tiger. And let me explain what I'm talking about. I think it was after the first or second back surgery. He was playing Torrey Pines, and he was in a group on Thursday and Friday with Dustin Johnson. And DJ was bombing it past Tiger. And Tiger was clearly annoyed at this and was still coming out of his shoes trying to hit the ball as far as these other guys. He couldn't accept that the physical limitation was he couldn't do that anymore. He was playing with Gary Woodland this past weekend, who's as long as anybody on the PGA Tour. When he hits it in the sweet spot, it goes. And he was clearly content. If he was 25 yards behind Woodland, that's fine. I'm going to be 25 yards behind Woodland. He accepted that, and it's almost like in his mind, the new demolish them is to demoralize them by having a short knocker, Tiger Woods, beat you with his brain and with his guile and with his pinpoint precision irons. And it's as if he's going to take as much satisfaction from doing that as when he used to overpower people in golf courses.
I think that's exactly what's going on. I think he's finally come to grips with the fact that, look, in 2 months he's going to be 44 years old. He's a middle-aged father of two with a receding hairline, you know. He's not 24 years old anymore. And that was hard for him to accept. You know, I remember that 96 U.S. amateur at Pumpkin Ridge. He had a little steel-headed driver with small head. He was hitting at 310 when everybody else was hitting at 290. You know, he was that much longer than everybody. Then the equipment changed. Bigger, stronger guys came on tour. You know, he's not one of the top 35 hitters on tour anymore. But what he's become, it's like that baseball pitcher who can't throw at 98 anymore, but he's figuring out how to get you out with location and curveballs and off-speed pitches. And that's what's Tiger doing. And when I said earlier that he's playing very Nicklaus-like, Jack only shot 65 when he needed to shoot 65. Otherwise, he'd put 70s up until you went out of your mind. You know, he was just not going to make a mistake. He was going to let you beat yourself. And that's sort of what Tiger's doing right now. He's just like saying, hey, man, I'm going to play fairways and greens and make an occasional putt. See if you can hang with me.
Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim. Before we move into the television landscape in golf, which I think has gotten very fascinating very quick in this country, one more thing about Tiger. And anytime you have a major milestone, like now he is tied with Sam Snead with 82 wins, and you could argue about the validity of wins on both sides. I don't care. They each have 82. Tiger's numbers start to come up again. And there are a couple that stand out to me as Ruthian, and we could probably go through a list of 40 or 50, and I will with Justin Ray in just a few minutes. But the two that stand out to me, one is is the consecutive cut streak. To me, that's DiMaggio. That's 56 hit game hit streak. No one is going to ever get close to 142 consecutive cut mades, right?
Yeah, no, that's a record. That's going to be like Cy Young's 511 wins in baseball. Yep.
And then the other number, and it's usually not listed. In fact, I'm going to give you credit for this because I think you're the one who first brought this to my attention a couple of years ago. This, to me, is almost as untouchable because it would take such an amazingly special player and some amazing luck. In three U.S. juniors, immediately followed by three consecutive U.S. amateurs. You do the math on it. That is 36 consecutive match play wins in USGA setup and conditions. 36-0 in 6 years in USGA match play. That's scary. Bobby Jones would like wake up right now and laugh at that, at the impossibility of someone being able to do that.
I think it might be his greatest achievement. He doesn't get the credit that he deserves for that. You know, in match play, all you got to do is run into one guy with a hot putter and you lose. You can shoot 65 and get beat. You know, I mean, somebody just go out there and has a hot day. And Tiger never let that happen. And in a lot of those matches, he was behind. You know, I was at Pumpkin Ridge when after 18 holes of the 36-hole final against Steve Scott, he was five down. He was two down with three to go. Came back, tied the match up, and then won it in the second extra hole.
Tripp Keeney had him dead to rights at Sawgrass.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's the number of times when it looked like he was done and he didn't let himself be done is astounding. And in a way, it's sort of fitting that he's ending his career the way he's ending it right now because we all thought he was done. You know, when you go 5 years without a win, when you go 11 years without a major championship, you don't expect somebody to then come back and not only win again, but win a major, and not only win again, but win multiple times in big events. It's something that, you know, I didn't see coming. I thought he was done.
Ron, before we get into the specifics of what went down with CBS's golf coverage this week, a full disclosure, I mentioned it, Ron Cyrak does work for the Golf Channel from time to time, so he knows a thing or two about the landscape of golf and television. When does the current TV deals expire, and when would a new one begin?
Well, here's what's fascinating about it. The PGA Tour contract with CBS, NBC, and the Golf Channel expires after the 2021 season. The LPGA's contract with Golf Channel expires after this season. What the LPGA did is negotiated a two-year bridge contract. So theirs expires in 2021, the same year as the PGA Tour. And guess who's negotiating the LPGA's TV contract? The PGA Tour. Now, that's interesting. So now both of the contracts, PGA Tour and LPGA, are going to expire after the 2021 season. And in my mind, the fact that the PGA Tour is negotiating for the LPGA indicates the PGA Tour thinks the LPGA might be the second most valuable product in all of golf. More valuable than the PGA Tour champions, more valuable than the Korn Ferry Tour, that it's a hot property. So it's going to be really, really fascinating to see the path that this next TV negotiation takes. And, you know, the way the media landscape is changing, we don't even know what the technology is going to be in 2 more years from now, because it's all about – it used to be producing it wasn't the hard part. Distributing it was the hard part because you had to be with a network or on a cable channel. Now you don't. You can stream stuff. There's a lot of doors open now.
Yeah, I think that the paradigms are really going to shift. One of the things that's going to be very different, I would think, from the PGA's negotiating standpoint, and it's interesting, I did not know that they were doing, it's almost going to be a package deal now with the LPGA. I maintained that the PGA Tour was not negotiating from the same position of strength that they had in the past, because the position of strength in the past was, we got Tiger Woods. And you don't. If you want Tiger Woods, this is where you come to get it. Well, this isn't Tiger who was going to play 18, 19 times a year. You're going to get Tiger 5 or 6 times a year. So I didn't think you had as strong a negotiating stance as you did before. But apparently, if they're packaging the LPGA, maybe they recognize that too. And so they're taking a different tack.
Well, the other strength that they have right now is that in all of the entertainment industry, live sports is the most valuable product out there. because it's the thing you can't DVR past the commercials on and stuff. You know, you want to watch it live. And you can see the crazy bidding that's gone on for the team sports. You know, and there are so many networks now that have all sports stations that are part of their broadcasting business plan. So they still have that going for them. Live sports is still in high demand. That's going to keep the price up there. Tim Finjam did a brilliant job. He leveraged Tiger Woods into several TV contracts that quintupled PGA Tour purses in the Tiger era. They're not going to get those kind of bumps up, but it's still going to be a much sought-after product.
Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest Taking Dead Aim. Get you out of here on this. Let's talk about some big changes that went down in golf coverage on CBS this week, with both Peter Costas and Gary McCord being shown the door, their contracts not being renewed. I think Costas is 72, McCord is 71. Look, I'm in the broadcasting business. I know that we're not all kids anymore. I get that. But gosh almighty, it's not like they did poor work. I wasn't seeing a drop off in performance. In fact, I marvel every time I see Peter Costas. I don't think people realize that he is lugging around 50 pounds of electronic equipment around his neck, around the golf course, to be ready at a moment's notice to do that swing vision stuff. And he was fantastic at it. I thought he really added something to the broadcast, and therefore I think he's kind of hard to replace.
Well, you know, I mean, I look at it the way I've looked at the changes that have happened in where I came from in the print media, which is that a lot of times age decisions are not made because of age, but they're made because of the number of zeros that are on your paycheck, you know, and can they save money that way? Also, I think right now everybody is trying to appeal to a younger audience. So maybe they're thinking if they can go out and find younger people to speak to the younger audience, that would be beneficial to them and the way to go. But so those are the things. Certainly it has nothing to do with the quality of their work. Both of those guys are real pros. And I have a feeling that you're going to see them pop up somewhere.
But isn't it somewhat out of both sides of your mouth for a network to say we're looking to get younger, and then your first hire is Davis Love III? I mean, you know, granted, he's younger than Peter Costas, but, you know, he is, what, 54 years old, 55 years old, and, you know, it was kind of a head-scratcher for me to use a word like to McCord that, you know, I just feel like we're getting stale. Well, I love Davis, don't get me wrong, but I don't think dynamic personality when I think Davis Love.
No, exactly. I don't think that either. I think in a lot of ways, and we've seen it, you know, we've seen it several times where people think that they're going to blow up the model and make something new and different, and then what they end up doing is not so much making something new and different, but replicating the old model with just different faces. And that seems to be a little bit what's going on here.
He is a past recipient of the PGA's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism from RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel. That's Ron Cyrak. And up next, the best golf stat guy in the business, Justin Ray of 15th Club Golf Analytics, takes Dead Aim at Tiger Woods by the numbers, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Justin Ray is the ultimate golf stat guy in the business. For years, he was the guy in the ear of all the Golf Channel and NBC announcers, feeding them those little nuggets of information that you went, oh, wow. Now he's with 15th Club Golf Analytics, and we talked Tiger this week. Justin, a few years ago, I think it was when Tiger was making, you know, comeback one, comeback two, or comeback three, you did a deep dive into the numbers of Tiger Woods, and I've saved this list over the years because every now and again, you sort of forget what we bore witness to, because the numbers aren't just Ruthian. At times, they're preposterous, right?
Yeah. I genuinely believe, and I've said this for years, that I know we all heap praise on Tiger, especially over the last 13 months, but it's going to take decades for us to truly understand how unbelievably dominant he was, not only at his peak, but now in terms of the longevity of his career. The PGA Tour record book is just basically Tiger's name in 150 times over and over and over again. And what's beautiful about being, you know, someone who works in statistics and analysis of the sport is that, you know, we're not even done telling the story of how dominant Tiger was in his past. It's basically just this endless reservoir of unbelievable, you know, distance between him and his peers. So there's always a new way to frame what he's doing. It doesn't ever seem to run out. And now, amazingly, after all that's gone on, transpired with his body, with his life over the last 10 years, he's adding on to it in this unbelievably surprising new chapter we have.
Yeah, that's what struck me this weekend when I was watching him, and I was thinking, okay, well, this is sort of the new Tiger, and he's just kind of an average guy on tour. And then someone said, he's won three times out of his last 14 events. No one but Rory McIlroy's done that. And I'm scratching my head going, okay, this isn't the guy who used to win seven or eight times a year. That's not going to happen anymore. But this guy with, I mean, he's a tinker toy at this point. He's been fused together. He's welded. I mean, he's like, I don't know what. He's like the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. And he's able to do this. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah, since the beginning of last year's playoffs, he's tied for the most wins on the PGA Tour with Rory, Brooks Koepka, and Bryson. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous thing to think of when we didn't know if he would ever even, you know, we didn't see him wear red anymore in a non-ironic way. Like, it was just to think of how far he's come in the last 15, 16 months. It's unbelievable. And, you know, hopefully it can maintain this way and we can add some more pages to this unbelievable history book.
Justin Ray is the man when it comes to golf stats. He's with 15th Club Golf Analytics, our guest taking Dead Aim. I don't know how much you looked into this. There's been a lot made of Tiger's 82 wins in terms of how many were, you know, set field events with no cut, you know, the WGC events and whatnot. But as you examine the 82 wins for Sam Snead, I was coming across some things and going, okay, I don't want to hear a word about Tiger. I mean, he had some events where there were like four people. That was an official event. He tied at the Crosby one year with three other guys, and they said, eh, we'll just give you all a win. I mean, what?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've always, even when Tiger, you know, went through the 5 years without a win, you know, five of Sam Snead's wins he's credited with are team events. So oftentimes shows and stuff I'd work on, we do a graphic to be most individual PGA Tour wins, and Tiger was already past Sam Snead. I mean, you can't – I don't know how you can distinguish, you know – I mean, I guess we give John Rahm and Ryan Palmer a win at the Zurich Classic, a team event now, but, you know, for 40 years there wasn't a team event on the PGA Tour. The Tour did – I genuinely think they did the best they could to come up with this number of 82 for Sam Snead. They wrote a great piece. After Tiger won the Masters, a really deep dive into the history of it. Sam Snead, his estate, his lawyer, they were adamant that his total of wins was 89. They had all kinds of reasons behind why it should be 89. And then again, you look through this list, and like you said, there was a four-way tie at the Crosby Clambake 1 year. Several of the events only had four players. It was more like, you know, if you think Hero World Challenges is a minuscule field. I mean, there were a handful of those at that time. Now, they were elite players, kind of like the Hero, or when it was the Chevron World Challenge that Tiger won several times. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to comb through it, there are all kinds of, you know, issues and perceptions of maybe some of the events weren't as strong as we think. Now, like you said, with Tiger on the flip side, a lot of no-cut events, not that Tiger's missed a whole lot of cuts in his career. He's got, you know, more than twice as many wins as missed cuts in his entire PGA Tour career, but which is another incredible fact. But, you know, I think that this is something that exists across all sports. I mean, you know, Babe Ruth played against segregated pitching. You know, the rules were different when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Wilt Chamberlain played. Wilt Chamberlain changed the rules of basketball because he was so dominant. You know, how about the passing records in the NFL now? I mean, with the defenses that are called and the penalties are called in the NFL, you know, how many yards would, you know, Dan Fouts and the Chargers offense have thrown for? You mean we have no idea. So these things are it brings a light to it because it's big in the news right now. But it's one of the great things about sports is that it just generates more discussion. And, you know, if you've got that idea going into it, that, okay, it's not all going to be cut and dry and it's not all just going to be, you know, Ruth had this many home runs, Hank Aaron passed him. It's not as, you know, it's not as rosy as in like everything in life. It's not as easy to decipher as just that.
Justin Reyes with 15th Club Golf Analytics. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Your list of numbers with Tiger, I referenced it before. I want to bring up a couple now. I'm sure you have some favorites. These are a couple of mine. From 02 to 05, Woods had 1,540 putts from 3 feet and in on the PGA Tour, and he missed three.
Yeah, that's a good one. What kills me about that is that the tour didn't start using ShotLink data until 03. So we don't have laser data for Tiger's ridiculous 2000 season that would just have been. I mean, we've got a lot of good numbers and much more than we did in, say, like Hogan's or Nicklaus's best years. But, yeah. 1,500, I mean, I miss three in a round when I go play. It's just, that's one of the things if you're a casual player that you
well, yeah, just like, think about how many times in a given year, if you play on a regular basis, that you go up and slap at one that you think is a gimme and you screw it up. I guarantee you, if you even play a small amount of time, you're going to do it a half dozen times a year.
Well, we're not Tiger Eldrick Taunt Woods, are we?
No. We definitely are not. The big number to me, you know, the Hank Aaron 755, I call it the DiMaggio 56-game hitting streak because this is the one that'll never get touched. 142, the consecutive cut streak. That is, I think what the current streak is probably somewhere in the teens, whoever has the most. I think someone got it into the 30s a year or so ago, and you just think to yourself, okay, now multiply that times four, and then come talk to me. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. To even get to 50 is amazing. The mark right now on the PGA Tour is Tommy Fleetwood with 30 in a row, and nobody else is even halfway there. And Tommy doesn't even play full-time on the PGA Tour. Tommy plays the biggest events on the tour, plays a handful, but he's a global player, plays in Europe. He's a consistent guy. But just think, Tommy is 112 away. 112. That's insane to even think of. That's more than the second longest streak ever. So he's had this crazy run of a year and a half or whatever it might be without missing a cut, and he's still like the entire old record away from getting the Tiger.
One of my favorite Tiger stats, and it's one that I credit Ron Cyrak with because he's the first one that pointed it out to me. Tiger won three U.S. Juniors and then backed it up with three USAMs. So six consecutive years of USGA titles. And in each one of those title runs, he had six match play matches. So in 6 years of USGA match play, Tiger went 36-0. To me, that's almost as great as the 142 from an amateur level. I mean, no one's even coming close to that ever.
It's incomprehensible. The only other guy to even win two U.S. junior amateurs is Jordan Spieth. Tiger won three in a row. Like, I mean, it's what he was in his, you know, when he first came out. Can you imagine the landscape now? Like, the U.S. I watched the U.S. amateur on NBC when I was a kid. Like,
right.
Can you even imagine an amateur golf tournament on national, like, over-the-air, you know, Channel 2 or whatever? I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, that's how big he was. You know, also, I like to think about, there aren't too many athletes who are child prodigies, are given immense hype, and then they actually live up to it or even exceed it.
Yes.
I mean, you could probably argue, but, you know, LeBron pretty much done that. But, I mean, Tiger is just, he became everything, you know, from a playing standpoint. He became everything that he was hyped up to be, which is just an unbelievable achievement. Because remember, 2 years, just I hate to pick on the guy, but remember a couple years after Tiger broke out, you know, Ty Tryon was going to be this amazing phenom. He's a great junior player and, you know, played in the PGA Tour event when he was super young. Or even think of, like, Michelle Wee, who won a major championship. But, you know, she was a child prodigy, too, obviously. Played in men's PGA Tour events as a teenager. It's so hard to maintain with that level of expectation, and, you know, just what we witnessed with Tiger is unbelievable. And what you referenced there with the six consecutive amateur titles is beyond comprehension.
Justin Reyes with 15th Club Golf Analytics, our guest taking Dead Aim. No one does more stat numbers than Justin Reyes. As you know, the argument in terms of greatest of all time, and I don't really care. It's a table for two or three, however you want to do it, and I don't care who you put there. But if you want to argue Nicklaus versus Woods, and you want to make a good cogent argument for each one. With Jack, it's real simple. It's 18 majors, it's 19 runner-ups, and it's longevity. He won majors in 3 decades. Tiger has now won majors in 3 decades. So the longevity thing doesn't matter. Now, he doesn't have the 18 majors or the 19 runner-ups. But because of the other numbers, can you really make an argument that, okay, if you just want to go majors, yes, but there's never been anybody like Tiger, not even Jack?
I think I don't want it to sound like the cop-out answer, but the best stretch of golf we've ever seen anyone play belongs to Tiger Woods over the course of several years. The best career in terms of everything all-encompassing, I think you still have to say it belongs to Jack Nicklaus because of what he did as an amateur, the more major championships, 73 PGA Tour wins. He had more than 90 top 10s in majors, which is an insane fact. Now, he doesn't have the same kind of, you know, linear dominant run that Tiger had over the course of, I guess it was 99 to 09. But I think that it's, like you said, it's a table for two or three. I mean, Bobby Jones played in a completely different time when being a professional golfer was like an insult because the amateur game was so revered. You know, that's a completely different landscape. The tour didn't exist. You know, it was, there was a series of tournaments, and he's credited with some tour wins, but, you know, that's a completely different time, too. And Bobby Jones was as big a sportsman in his day as, you know, guys in his day were like, what, Babe Ruth and, you know, the biggest names in sports. So Hogan's also in that conversation, too.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. You teased with a tweet the other day that you have been diving into some Hogan numbers. And, you know, I'm in the tank. My son is named Hogan, and it ain't after Hulk. So, you know, I'm in the tank for Ben Hogan. What have you found with his numbers that sort of took you aback?
I think he was the best U.S. Open player since World War II, and there's a lot of great numbers to put that into perspective. The run he put together after the car accident was just absolutely amazing, and I know there's a human element to that, too, considering all he went through to play, you know, the kind of, not prehistoric, but, you know, a little bit antiquated medicinal methods he had to go through just to get ready to play golf and to still be that dominant, to be that great at what he did. He's one of my favorite athletes of all time is Satchel Paige because of all the great stories about Satchel. And, you know, he's almost like this larger-than-life fictional character. That's kind of what we have with Hogan and how, you know, he's kind of mythologized. And, but there are a lot of numbers. There are enough numbers there to exist to back up that he had as great a run as any player in the history of the sport, maybe besides Tiger. So I don't think he – I know he's deified a little bit in golf communities historically and among hardcore fans, but I don't think across the board there's enough appreciation for what he achieved in his career. If we're only going through and talking about, you know, Jack versus Tiger, which is, you know, that's the easy conversation to have, I think. But I think if you stretch it out, you've got to include Hogan and probably Bobby Jones in that. Just discussion. Get them to the table. I'm not saying they've got the biggest seat there, but get them to the table at least.
Get you out of here on this. Justin Reyes with 15th Club Golf Analytics, our guest taking Dead Aim. We now have, I guess, almost two full years of this Tiger comeback. Do we have enough data to sort of develop a hypothesis or a trend of what we can expect, or is the health just too big a variable to really make a definitive statement or even a great guess at a statement as to what Tiger could achieve?
Amazingly, this win at the Zozo Championship and the context around it is the perfect answer to it, because he's coming off knee surgery again. We didn't know what to expect. And he came out and was, you know, showed why he can still be the best iron player on the planet right now. And that's what he was amazing with his irons and made his putts and was reasonably accurate and won. I think I don't think we can have an answer because I don't know if you can keep expecting a guy who's, you know, he might be the oldest 43-year-old on the planet and expect him to keep, like, could he have another surgery next year? I don't know. The numbers say he probably will at some point, but when he gets an opportunity on certain golf courses where driving accuracy isn't paramount, like Augusta National, where iron play is the most vital thing across the board, like Augusta National or like, you know, this course in Japan where he won last week, he's capable of beating anybody. And, you know, we're not going to get it in the overwhelming, you know, runs of consistency where every time he plays, he looks like he feels like he can win. But, you know, every now and again, next year in his age 44 season, I'd probably put the over-under on wins at 1.5. I mean, I think that there's definitely a possibility he wins a couple more times on the PGA Tour in the 19-20 season. And, you know, but it's a long-winded, complicated way of saying I don't really know, and everything we saw in the last 2 weeks is more of an indicator of why we shouldn't think we know, because of the surgery and his ability to play at this peak, even with the difficulties with his own body.
That guy is a must follow on Twitter for golfers, at Justin Ray. He's just fantastic. And when we return, Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer takes dead aim at the ever-evolving TV golf landscape, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hey, we're taking that aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. This week, CBS Sports fired Peter Costas and Gary McCord from their golf team, and then hired Davis Love III. And who talked with Davis first? Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. Well, Ron, let's start with this, because I'm always amused when I ask you these questions. You're like, well, I've known about this for about 8 months. How long have you known about Davis Love going to CBS and all of this, that you've been sitting on it?
I wasn't sitting on a darn thing. It makes total sense to me. I think it's a great hire once they made the move. But like the people who were involved on the other side of it, Gary McCord and Peter Costas, it all came out of the blue to me, too. I know it certainly blindsided them, but, you know, I think they've already sort of moved it on down the road now with them. And, I had a 30-minute conversation with Gary McCord a couple days ago when talking about some about this, but just about other things and what a great life in golf he's had. But, you know, yeah, he was shocked by it. I mean, I love listening to him. I think he found a way to make the inevitably boring parts of golf telecasts, making them entertaining. But they chose to, in their words, I guess, freshen it up. And so we'll have a different telecast team for CBS in the future.
Yeah, I'm going to try to ask this next question without sounding anti-Davis Love, because I'm not. I really like Davis. I like everything about Davis. Let me just get that out there. In a way, I get it, though. I mean, McCord's 71. I think Costas is 72. I'm in the broadcasting business, whether anybody wants to admit it or not. The broadcasting business is ageist. But to me, if you're McManus, don't tell McCord, hey, we need to get younger and less stale, and then hire somebody who's in their mid-50s. I don't get that. You're not exactly younging things up by hiring somebody with an ARP card. If you're going to go young, or don't use that excuse at all.
Yeah, I don't know if the young part, how much that played into it. I think just a fresh voice. I think, you know, I mean, the part we don't know is, given all the you know, bidding and negotiations that are underway right now with future rights, if this was a step toward making sure they secure part of the PGA Tour package going forward after 2021, maybe there's something to that. Certainly the timing, you know, can't be totally coincidental that this happens in there in the midst of having just made their pitch to the PGA Tour. So, I think Davis is terrific. He's smart. He's articulate. He is insightful. He's willing to think outside boxes. I was going to say he's a little bit younger than me. He's significantly younger than me, as most people are. And I think he'll be good. But I think also, McCord, it became so comfortable with McCord, and then hearing Peter out there doing what he did, and I think Davis will have a learning curve. And then I think if Trevor and Mark Immelman, as expected, come in there, that there will be part of that for them too. It will sound different and look a little different. You know, I know that Jim Nance was talking about when he was on the U.S. Open broadcast earlier this year out at Pebble Beach, talking about the difference when I think he cited the numbers to Joe Buck, said, well, when we cover a tournament out here in February, we have 8 cameras out here and you guys had 100 for the U.S. Open. So, you know, I would expect to see some changes coming from the CBS side.
Ron Green Jr. is with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. Our guest taking dead aim. He has written a piece in the Global Golf Post Plus, GGP Plus, regarding Davis Loves Higher with CBS. You mentioned the negotiating for the next television contracts. I was made aware of something earlier today by Ron Cyrak that I was completely in the dark about. I had always gone from the opinion going into this with zero knowledge that the PGA Tour might be at a less advantageous negotiating stance than they have been before, in that we're not dealing with Tiger Woods from 2000 to 2010. We're dealing with an old Tiger Woods who's not going to be showing up as often, so you can't use him as the bargaining chip that Fincham was so ably able to use through two and three different television contracts, but that the PGA Tour was negotiating TV deals as a package with the LPGA. I find this really interesting. Had you heard about this?
I hadn't heard about it that way, but it's what strikes me immediately is they can't use Tiger Woods. I believe he won the last tournament that was played, didn't he?
But he's going to show, Ron, he's not showing up 18, 19 times a year. He's going to show up a half dozen times to eight times a year, tops.
No, I think he's going to play more than that. But I think, but he's still Tiger Woods, and that is a big bargaining chip. And, you know, I think what interests me about this is the way it's going to look to us, particularly on Thursdays and Fridays. I think, you know, there's a good chance it's not going to be what we've gotten used to. You know, I assume ultimately the Golf Channel will remain a player in this and we'll have the big guys. But, you know, I think Jay Monahan is not afraid to do something different. And I know there's a lot of interest in streaming possibilities. And, you know, if you can believe what they say about Turner or whatever that company is, you know, offering headline news as a golf-centric station, which would, of course, probably be the end of the Golf Channel if that happened. But you know, I think there's a lot of things at play here, and if they want to bring in the LPGA, obviously I don't think the LPGA is in it. It would be wise of the LPGA to be part of this because it would only strengthen its position. I mean, you want to align with the best. I mean, if you know, if I'm out there playing golf and I'm picking teams trying to do something with somebody, I want to pick Tiger or Brooks Koepka or Rory McIlroy. So I think it's something like that.
Well, for golf geeks like us, I mean, PGA Tour Live has been fantastic in the last couple of years. I absolutely love, you know, going on there in the mornings and watching, you know, featured groups and whatnot. And it is really, really good golf coverage. And if that's been sort of the test market for them of can we do this, I can see a world where Thursday and Friday coverage is exclusive to PGA Tour Live. And that way, the PGA Tour is able to collect revenue from people subscribing to that as a subscription service, yet still able to receive revenue from the networks who are bidding on things for Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, well, I think there's still you'll still be able to go across your television and find golf on television on Thursday and Friday. But, you know, you talk about watching a featured group. How about what they're doing at the Players' Championship next year? They're going to televise every shot hit by every player. I mean, through the tournament. I mean, 156 players or 144, whatever. I mean, you're going to be able to watch every shot Harold Varner hits or every shot Sepp Straka hits or whatever. Whether you want to, I mean, I would say if you choose to, you don't have to. But, I mean, that's just a sense of sort of how they're trying to expand what they're doing. And all of this, part of what throws this into even, heightened interest, I think, is the whole gambling aspect of it. You know, I mean, they're already saying they're going to have gambling on site during tournaments next year. They hadn't said exactly when and where and how, but that's coming. And so I think, you know, they want, and they said they want people betting shot by shot if they want to about things. So, I mean, we're sort of going into that brave new world, I think. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to get, but I think we're going to get a lot of something.
Ron Green Jr. is with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer in the Global Golf Post Plus this week. He wrote about Davis Love III going to CBS. An interesting side note to all that went on. The headline was Davis hired and Costas and McCourt shown the door, but this was kind of quiet. The designated Jim Nantz for all of these years has been Bill McAtee. Bill McAtee quietly removed from the golf coverage. It doesn't say whether or not he'll still be a part of their tennis coverage, and he's been a big part of that for CBS. Who is the company grooming to be the next Jim Nantz? And he's got to be looking over his shoulder. He's 60. This is the network that fired Walter Cronkite. Has there been any talk of who the new McAtee is going to be when Jim doesn't show up for those tournaments?
Honestly, I haven't given that any thought. I don't know. Good question. I'll have to think about that. I feel pretty secure that Jim's going to be around doing what he does for a good long while, I think. But I don't know who, what they may do. It's a fair question to ask, but I don't have an answer for you.
Back to Davis. I know he says he's not done competing, but he has to be. I've been racking my brain ever since I read your story yesterday. I can't remember a player who went into the booth, and once they were in the booth, was able to maintain a game that was sharp enough to contend on any tour while they were still doing that job. I know Trevino went into the booth and then came out and was great on the Champions Tour, the Senior Tour at the time. Can you think of a player who's been able to do both?
No, I think Gary McCord actually got into the booth because they always had weekends off. The way he said it. I know guys, you think about all the guys who've done, Trevino did it. I think Norman gave it a whirl, But, yeah, I think Davis is at a point. I mean, he's 55. I think he still wants to do some stuff on the Champions Tour. I think he understands where he stands on the PGA Tour. He knows that, there are a handful of places, whether it's RSM, whether it's Wyndham, whether it's maybe Hilton Head, that he's got a chance to go be competitive. It's funny to hear Davis talk about it now, how he can't hit it far enough out there to be as competitive as he wants. Same thing Freddie Couples said, and, they were always the bombers. And now he's like, well, wait a minute, they can't hit it far enough. Maybe I don't feel so bad that my 7-iron doesn't go quite as far as it used to. But, I think he might be able to step out there and have some good tournaments. He finished had a good start at Sony last year. I think he was 12th or something there. But I think this is a subtle acknowledgement that, okay, I can go on and look at the next phase of my career without totally abandoning. And again, they only have like 16 or 18 tournaments, so it's not as if it takes up the entirety of his year.
Didn't Davis, I know he had surgery a couple of years ago, but didn't he have another surgery this past year? What is his health like?
I think he feels pretty good. I saw him somewhere recently, and he's doing okay. He had another foot surgery, I think.
That's what it was.
I shouldn't say it was a loose track. He's had between necks and feet and hips and all that. He's had a few things, but he talked very optimistically about his ability to get back and play. Now, whether he can play, how much he will play, CBS, I guess, will start at Torrey Pines, and he'll be there, so he could go out there and maybe play one of those Hawaii Senior Tour events before they start. But I don't know. That may actually overlap. But anyway, he has not been terribly competitive recently. And I think when this opportunity came along, and granted, he and Lance Barrow have been best buddies for years and years and years, it seemed like a natural fit. He fits, to me, he fits what CBS has become. And I know a lot, it became very familiar. Some people would say stale. But I think they can keep the essence of what they do and how they do it, and adding these new voices, sure, it gives them a fresh approach to it, and it will sound different. And it's funny how we get so get to our routines as viewers. We know what we want, what we expect. That's why Johnny Miller sort of threw us off when he came out there just with his way. Then when he left, you sort of missed him. So I think McCord will be missed for a while. I mean, I think whether Davis is on the ground or if it's Markham or whatever, they can give you some of what Peter had. Now, Peter Costas, I thought, was really good. I mean, he could take it, a swing, distill it into a single important thought and just turn it right back to you better than about anybody.
Well, and you've seen this, and I have too, and I marveled at Peter Costas, especially when he was battling cancer and everything else. The equipment that Peter Costas was lugging around his neck weighed more than 50 pounds, and he was following those players on the golf course, and they literally would send him a swing, and it's not like he'd been working on that for days. He was doing it on the fly on the golf course, and like you said, I was always amazed by it, and I thought he did a tremendous job.
Yeah, he really did. I was sitting here scanning. I sat down and had a long talk with him back in Wells Fargo time. And he told me the story of how the whole thing came together with the, whatever you want to call it, that thing he carries around his chest. It looks like a microwave oven.
It does. That's exactly what it looks like.
He was telling me, I'm trying to figure out, it happened at Quail Hollow. He said in the old first fairway, I guess the first fairway at Quail Hollow, still the first fairway, was a different hole. And Lance Barrow came to him and said, I need you to give me a Phil Mickelson swing vision. He said, I got literally 5 seconds notice, and I had to do one of those. And said, I didn't know what to do, but I turned around to the kid carrying it. He had a guy carrying it for him, like Dottie Pepper has. He said, but the guy wasn't ready. He was over talking to some girl. And so suddenly he had to do the whole swing vision without ever seeing the swing and doing it off the top of his head. And he says, tell you what, I'll just carry it by myself from now on. It actually weighs 15 pounds, he said. It weighs 6 or 7 pounds, he said, but everything he carries with his belt and all that is 15 to 20 pounds. But he's the best. He just knows how to take it and distill it. And, you know, even as he was doing the CBS Sports stuff, he would fly back on Mondays after doing tournaments and be on the range out in Arizona giving lessons to you and me if we wanted them. Said he got as much fun, as much joy and satisfaction out of teaching double-digit handicappers as he did tour players. And he told me, he said his plan was to definitely retire after 2021, but got there a little faster, so now he will be teaching. We'll see what else. I think opportunities will come around for these guys if they want them.
Well, that's what I wanted to get you out of here on. If you were to place a quid or two on whether or not we've seen and heard the last of Costas and McCord covering golf on television, which way would you go?
Well, I asked Gary McCord that specifically, and he said, I'm not doing anything for 2 years. He said, I'm going to sit back, study the landscape, see what's out there, and determine. You know, there's a lot of things that are going to be coming online as the whole medium expands and with the betting and all that. So I think I sort of think that's true of him. He was laughing. He said he actually got invited an invitation to be in a movie. The day after he got fired, he said it came out, I get an invitation to be in a movie. He said, it's not about me, but I turned it down. I think he will take his time. I think he's too distinctive a voice for someone, whether it's satellite radio or somebody else, not to get him involved, to keep him involved, because he's got such a perspective, such a keen sense of humor, and such insight. I think that's invaluable. I think I got to believe there are ways Peter Costas can be involved too. I think again, he'd be great with a radio show because he's got such strong opinions and such a good background of what he's done and what he's known, who he's been around. I don't know. I mean, who else? I mean, NBC, Fox, they've got off channel. There might be some opportunities, but I think it might be later rather than sooner. I think they'll both probably sit back and see what unfolds.
It's Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. I'd also like to thank Golf Stats Geek extraordinaire Justin Ray of 15th Club Analytics and Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel for their time and insight this week. A reminder, if you're just catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now, links to articles on the latest goings on in and around the game. Hey, weather-wise, fall and fall crisp temperatures have arrived in the Carolinas this weekend, and it'll be really nice for teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And when you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.